Welcome, everybody, to In Need of Attention. I'm here with my guest. He's written a book. He's a former English teacher.
Yeah.
He's a dad. He's a husband. He's a jack of all trades and has been a friend for 6 years, a boss for 11 and a half months. And a
was it really 11 and a half months?
I think it wasn't quite a year. And a, how do I say this, a sarcastic sounding board for the majority of the tragedy, tension, and confusion I've gone through in my life over that time. So without further ado, my friend and mentor, Kirk Marshall, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. Did you prepare that?
That's off the top of my head.
Okay,
that's the top of my head.
The one I received the most is sarcastic sounding board, because I want to be a sounding board.
You are.
I want to be a good sounding board.
Yeah.
Does the sarcasm make it me a better sounding board?
No.
It makes me a worse
sounding board. It makes you a worse one. Like when I come to you, I'm like, hey, this really bad thing just happened. You're like, oh, wow. Your life is over.
It's like, yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah.
Thanks for confirming that. I appreciate it. Yeah.
I'm confirming
you
the
are.
Bad stuff
yeah,
too
absolutely.
Quick is what
absolutely.
It is. Okay.
How are you doing?
Good. Good. I'm really good. All those things you said about me are relatively true.
Relatively.
I appreciate that.
This is our first conversation in a couple months, so I figured why not have it recorded? You know, why not have it in the ether on the internet?
To catch up.
Just to find out.
Find out what's going on in my world.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get started, I kind of briefed you on this before we started, but this is In Need of Attention. It's a safe space. We believe that there is more for people. Better is available to them. And we are stubborn here in our belief that there's more perspective to gain, right?
You're stubborn.
We'll get into that.
Okay, right.
And this episode will be as good as you're willing to make it. Pressure's on you. Be as vulnerable as you want. Don't really want you to be intimate because that's your business.
Okay.
We'll go from there. Sound good?
Vulnerable. You said as good as I want it to be. Should I strive to make it better or should I just... You know,
whatever,
be as grounded as I can.
Yeah, whatever your conviction is, this could go 10 minutes or an hour. So,
which one do you want it to be? Okay, all right. Yeah, I'm not gonna strive to make it good. And if it ends up being really bad,
it's great.
That's on you for what you just
I'm
said.
I'm still gonna put it out.
Okay.
And there's more of me talking than you. So,
yeah, we can make that happen. Yeah. Yeah.
What's new for you? What's going on? How are you feeling?
I feel
old. Why?
Because I'm getting old.
Yeah.
You're getting old too.
I am. How old are you?
Do I have to say?
Yeah.
I'm in my 40s. In my mid 40s.
I'm holding back so much right now.
Why?
You're in your mid 40s. You have a mullet.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
and
I'm in the hat stage of my mullet.
One of
right
the
now.
Things that I resent the most about you is that when I met you, you were a late 30s.
Yeah. Mid to late 30s.
Shut up.
Late 30s.
Approaching
a
midlife crisis. You wore in between the toe flip-flops with jeans on a year-round basis. Like
I didn't wear them in the winter.
You did. You did.
No, I didn't.
And you always had a comment about what I was wearing.
A good comment?
Most of the time.
It was like a provocative comment. I was saying something
in the workplace.
In the workplace.
Okay. Provocative in the workplace.
Yeah. I think about that. I think about that a lot. And you say that's something resentful for you?
About you, because now you surrounded yourself with all these like young people. So you work at a church, you work in a student ministry, all these young people. And you started dressing different like 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
And it pissed me off.
Okay. Why?
Because not only did I try to get you to dress better and cooler, but you resisted it. And our friend in common, Hillary Mitchell, tried to do the same.
Okay. I'm going to set the record straight here. I hear you. I hear why you might think that's what's happening.
Okay.
It's not. It's not. First of all.
Tell me why this isn't assimilation. Go ahead.
I'll tell you why. Yeah. First of all, I took everything you said to heart. I heard you and I was scared. I was scared. So I made a decision, like you said, in my late 30s to bring in two early 20-something people who I thought were fantastic. I still think you're fantastic.
Thanks,
even though, And Hillary, can I say, will you bleep that out? Can I say Hillary? Like, I remember saying to you guys, like, you guys have good taste, and not just in like style and fashion and whatever, but in like, you know, what's interesting, what's right. cool, what are your interests? And I remember saying to you guys, like, you know, that thing you have, you feel like you sometimes have to like, you know, squelch it so you don't piss people off. Yeah. And I said, don't do that. Like, bring it, like, go all the way in. I look back at that and I wonder if that was a wrong thing to say, but you didn't hold back.
I didn't.
And you channeled it, a lot of it, towards critiquing my, me, just me, not, not what I was wearing, me in general. The things I said, things I did, which was, it was funny. I had no issue with that, but there was a, I remember specifically with the flip flops, you know, I remember being at summer camp and there was two specific people that were just repulsed by the fact that I was wearing, it's a summer. Mm-hmm. And to my credit, not to my credit, just as who I am, I grew up in Florida. I didn't wear shoes. I lived a mile from the ocean for 17 years of my life. Wearing shoes was an impediment. I tried surfing. I wasn't good at it, but I tried surfing. So there was a cultural thing for me. Mm-hmm. It's just what you do. You wear shorts. You wear you wear flip flops. They sit by the door covered in sand. You smack them outside and then you put them on. And then I came to Cincinnati. And I lived in Cincinnati for all these years, and I see millennials, geriatric millennials, and Gen X people with flip flops. I'm like, oh, this is okay. This is stylistically okay. Mm-hmm. At Crossroads, you remember how what a hold, what a stronghold?
I know.
Can I say Crossroads?
Well, I don't know why you couldn't.
Okay, just making sure. You edit me if you need to.
I'm not going
to
edit you.
But the flip flops and the skinny jeans had a stranglehold on culture.
Did
in the late 20-aughts, 2008 to 2018.
Sure.
And so when you guys told me, like, don't do this anymore. Actually, did you say that? Did you say don't, or did you just roast me for it?
I probably didn't say it that kindly.
Yeah.
At the time, knowing who I was, I did tell you to stop doing it a fact.
Pretty direct. You had some moments where you're really direct.
Very clearly. And this is, as interesting as it is to hear about the oppression of the closed-toed shoe that you went through.
Yeah.
This is a great onboard to why I wanted to invite you here today. Is cool. I thought it'd be really fun to talk about the tension of managing me.
Yeah.
And so you're alluding to it a little bit.
But it's something I think about all the time.
I know you're scarred. So I wanted to ask you this direct question, and then we can just roll with it from there. Describe the positive, the negative, but overall, what was the tension when you look back on that time of managing a person like me?
Well, first of all, you said we've been friends for 6 years.
Probably so.
I think 7 years.
Seven, maybe,
2018, you were an intern. Remember the intern?
You're right. Okay, yeah, you're right.
We might not have been. We were friends then.
I blocked that out, but yes.
Yeah, we argued all the time. Mm-hmm. But not nearly as much as you argued with someone else who was on our team. All right. You guys were comically arguing with each other, but you weren't being funny. You were
dead serious.
Dead serious. Mm-hmm. You were dying on the hills of opinions about movies, sports, NBA, all those things. And it was fascinating. So I saw all that. Mm-hmm. I saw you were, I don't know how old you were back then. You were young.
I was.
But you held to your opinions and you were sharp. Mm-hmm. One of the questions that, you know, I ask myself, it's like, hey, why did you hire that guy? Like, I remember I pursued you.
You did.
I thought you'd be great for our team.
Yeah, you reached out to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you'd be great for our team based on your internship, based on the stuff that you were interested in at that time.
Right.
And I didn't go into that thinking there wouldn't be tension. Mm-hmm. And I think I've seen hiring managers do this, since we're talking about HR and hiring managers and whatever. They go into this thinking, like, I'm going to bring someone onto our team who's going to release tension. It's like a release valve. This person, all of a sudden, all the tension's gone, but they're carrying this weight, and they're walking down this pathway, and I don't have to worry about this anymore. I just think that's foolishness. Mm-hmm. I think that's bonkers. So I would do it again. I mean, I know there's things that I would do differently as your leader. I even thinking about that question of, like, hey, you guys, don't hold back. Just own the fact that you know what's good and what's not good and own that. Because I thought that would help us to move faster. We don't have to waste any time kind of determining what's going to be good. We just know. We know this is what culturally is current right now. Let's, for social media, let's, for video purposes, YouTube, whatever it is, let's dive in, let's make our mark, and let's go fast.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit, Right. And that kind of, it kind of broke a lot of the stride that we had. I think back to that specific moment, and I sometimes think, like, what if I had, instead of enforcing the certainty, because at age 22, 23, whatever it was, you were more certain about the world than you are now. Probably. Is that fair?
That's probably true.
You were wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong. Yeah.
And so the thing that gets in the way of certainty, well, actually, the thing that gets in the way of certainty in a good way is curiosity.
Right.
I kind of said to you guys, like, don't be curious. Be certain. You know what you like. You know what's good. And I battle with this certainty versus curiosity thing a lot. Sure. The thing you could have added in your intro, I'm a know-it-all.
You are.
I try to say I'm a recovering know-it-all. You're like, I'm aware. I'm at least self-aware, and I want to not be someone who just comes across like they try to know it all, an actually guy, you know. That's the struggle for me, because I want to be assured. I don't want to be kind of caught out with not knowing something. Mm-hmm. How many times do you have that conversation where you're like, hey, have you seen this movie? And you're like, the answer is no, but you know that you can't say you haven't seen it. It's like, yeah, is that the one with Robert Downey Jr.? Is he in that? It's like, no, it's with this person. Like, oh yeah. And you still haven't seen it.
Right.
I've done that. And I realized why am I like hedging on this? Is I don't want to be the person who hasn't seen this movie. That's so dumb. And I'm like trying to like, I don't want that. I don't want that in my life anymore. I want my default to be curiosity. I want to have like better questions. Mm-hmm. I want to be the kind of person who is way more curious than they are certain about things, because that just opens up more avenues for connection.
Right.
So I kind of think back to leading you. Like, I created an environment for you to be the most certain SOB. And I think maybe if I'd gone back, it would have probably set us up. It's all hindsight.
Sure.
For COVID better. Right. Maybe, it probably would have set us up for like having a better like digital curiosity.
Sure.
During that. There's not a regret, but this is one of those things. Like, I think I could have set you up better for success.
Hmm. That's interesting.
I think I could have.
I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
But that's interesting.
Yeah.
When you think, so again, for context, so you were my boss. You hired me at Crossroads. That's where I worked before.
Crossroads Church, based out of Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
1995.
Yep. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
I was doing video. You were kind of over the kind of thing through this transition period and different stuff. And so really, I mean, that was my first like job, really, like went to school for this field specific,
like a career job.
Yeah, sure. And I was there for 5 years and popped around and had different roles and kind of transitioned from video specific to like more like content and paid to think and talk more than I'm paid to like execute and do. Right. So, but even when I look back on that, you know, like I'm in this place now where it's like, oh, I'm a preacher and I talk in front of people and I help people become better communicators and I am writing stuff. I want to show you after this. I wrote this book thing. I want to show it to you. It's 87 pages. I wrote it in a month and printed it. I want to show it to you. But all this writing, you were the person who encouraged me to start writing stuff. And I was just like, oh, no, like,
yeah,
I can't do that. That's not me, blah, blah, blah. And so I look back on that time, not just fondly because of the friendship we have and that sort of stuff. And it doesn't mean it wasn't hard or I always say that you're the person who taught me how to collaborate.
Yeah.
Because coming from film school, trying to start a film company, movies, if you're a director, an executive producer, the model is like, hey, it's you or nothing.
Yeah.
You're the decision maker.
Yep.
You're the authority. You make the whatever. And so
your vision for something is the most important
there thing. And yeah, it's not even the most important, it's the only thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing else that exists. Yeah. It is a dictatorship. Mm-hmm. And I am the dictator. And coming into that a church setting with that purview of like, well, I need to front this, lead this, I'm right, they're wrong, and if they want to go with what's wrong while I'm right, how can I proactively sway us to what's right while we're doing what's wrong? Right. Yeah. Like it's this very, like I, like you said, certain kind of mindset. Yep. And what learning how to write forced me to do was be curious. To be a good writer, I had to be considerate of the person I'm speaking to,
mm-hmm.
not just considerate of what I think.
Yeah.
And so I always talk about how you were the person who taught me how to collaborate. Like, that was our, like, yeah, buzzword, like, vomit, because we say it so much, like, we'll just collaborate. Just what, like, and I don't think I really learned what that truly meant until the 11, 12-month intensive of going from, we should get a bus and have smoke come out of it.
We did
which it. Which we did. And but what a lesson, you know?
What a lesson.
And all the way to, like, can you do this, that, the third, help this team here, maybe throw some effort there, like, through COVID, the whole thing, like, during COVID, I mean, some of the stuff we were doing online, because we couldn't meet in person, was, like, we were doing those, like, monthly episode things where it was, like, you know, the three of us would go our separate ways for a week, and...
I still think it was good.
I do, too.
I think some of the stuff we did was awesome.
I do, too, and it was, like, we would all think and write stuff down and then come together, dump it in a pile, and then I would film it, whether I was in it or whoever, record it for a week, edit it for a week, put it out, and then start the process over. But it was such a, like, you know, all three phases, all thing, like, it to me is what took me from very limited in my capacity, ability, and mentality to being not just more curious, but also more accepting of what I truly wanted to do. I just didn't have the confidence to do.
Yeah.
And that really was because you pushed me a lot and forced me to learn how to collaborate with other people.
Yeah. I remember exactly where we were when you started talking about, you had written some stuff and you were hesitant. You were reluctant to share it, like, a purple notebook. Wasn't it a little purple notebook?
Yeah.
And as a former English teacher, like, that, my built-in response to that was, like, everyone has to write. Like, it doesn't matter if you're going to, like, be good at it, which I think you ended up being pretty good at it, but that's just kind of, you have to express yourself or figure out a way to express yourself with that consideration, with that curiosity, because, like, you don't get to manipulate your audience. You can't talk to them a third time. You get this 100%. One effort to say the thing. I look back on that. That's probably my favorite thing that, I mean, I have no regrets about that.
Yeah.
You know, like, if I could push that leadership on anybody, it would be the same thing. It's like, find a way to be curious and to learn how to collaborate. Do you remember the one we shot in the parking garage? Was that after you moved off of our team?
It might have been. I don't know.
I don't want to talk about that. We'll cut that part. I was just curious about that. Hannah and Chimisura were in it.
Oh, yes. I was there. You were there? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
When they were, like, had separate things.
Yep. Yeah,
I think that was great.
I thought that was awesome.
I think it was one of the coolest things we've ever done.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it needs more exposure.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The curiosity thing is really big. And I think one other thing I'll say, trust is so hard. To have trust when you're collaborating with someone, to trust someone's intentions.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, someone chose the wrong thing and you did everything you can.
Right.
To get them to do the right thing according to what you have. Like, what is it that is, like, holding you? Like, you have to, like, you're drawn to trying to manipulate them into this thing that's your idea. It's because you don't trust that they want what you want, you know, whatever goal it is you have for your team or something like that. And
That's an interesting thing too. I've done and Sarah hates this cause it's all I talk about, but I have done I don't know if it's a 180, 360, whatever you want to call it. What
360 be right back where you were.
Well, to whatever degree that I've changed.
180.
45 maybe.
Okay.
10 degrees. 95 degrees. On trust. So my kind of feeling, and I totally stole this, but I'm going to repeat it like it's mine. What this did was, I heard this from Dr. Anita Phillips. She is like a author, speaker, botanist, like, crazy, wicked smart person. Like, can't recommend her enough.
All right.
She, talking about trust, said this, and I currently don't use the word trust. I don't use it. Because the word trust is like a mask, right? That trust means something different than the way we're using it. Okay.
That's true. I know that's true.
So when you say you don't trust someone, what you're really saying is, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And not only am I afraid, but I'm afraid that you are going to do the thing that I don't want you to do. And when you have someone that you trust, it's not that you actually trust them. It's that you have experience and evidence that can supply you confidence to believe that although you think they might do the thing you don't want them to do, you have evidence and confidence now that they're not going to do it. And so
the fear's reduced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so when I'm with Sarah and we're arguing or we're talking about an area where I'm like a dickhead or she's annoying or whatever it is, I don't go, "Hey, I don't trust you in this area." I go, "Hey, I'm afraid that you're going to do this. And I don't feel like I have the evidence to give me the confidence that you won't do it."
Yeah.
Right. And so the word trust to me right now is this like relay baton that affords people control relationally and in a situation to manipulate and decide when and where they want to give trust.
Yeah.
And so if you tell me, "Hey, I trust you," you can't just yank it back at the first point of opposition, the first point of tension, because that's not trust. Mm. That's you wanting to control the result of my actions, which isn't healthy.
I agree with all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I still use trust though?
You can if you want. It would make you less smart than me. Yeah, it'd make you less smart than me. But you can do that for sure. And so to your point about like how that's used relationally, work wise, whatever, the tension of like, I work with this person but I don't trust them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the end all be all, right? Like you hire someone thinking I trust that they can do the work in their job. You work for someone thinking, "Hey, I can trust that they're advocating for me and whatever." The second that's gone, speaking from experience, it's over.
Yeah.
It can't, right? And so to repair that requires relinquishing of control that at the point of distrust is so hard to give. Because if anything, you feel like you have the evidence to support
why you shouldn't.
That they cannot, you should not have confidence that they are going to do this for you.
One thing, okay.
Let's hear it.
Bullshit. I'm just kidding. It's great.
Perfect.
No, it's
perfect.
It's good. I think that the fear, adding the fear, and that's a better understanding of what mistrust is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really do think so, because you mentioned that, or Dr. Baker, I don't know, who was it? Dr.
It was me. It was me.
Anita.
I mentioned
that's
it.
Not right.
Phillips.
Yeah. Anita Phillips. That's Phillips. Not even close to Baker.
It's not.
Just Anita Baker. Okay. Yeah. Anyways, but she, the idea that once, I would say maybe push back, not saying she's wrong, but maybe just the way you said it. Like once it's gone, there's no coming back from it. There is.
No, there definitely is. Yeah.
But once, like you said, once you hire someone, you basically put trust into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
You said, "I trust you enough to give you this amount of money to do this task."
Right.
In organizations, this thing I've seen is trust is always a downward thing.
For sure.
It's like everyone's asking someone to trust leadership. But it's hard to trust downward. We don't have like good language around that.
Yeah.
And I think like, "Hey, I trusted you. I gave you the thing. I'm going to expect you to meet the expectation."
Yeah.
If there's an environment where, I'll use your language, where we're putting fear to death, we can't have a fearful environment. What corporation wants to have a fearful environment? No one does. But how many environments and organizations in corporate world are full of mistrust?
For sure.
Almost all of them.
Right.
Almost all of them are. That's a great language for it, because what you're saying is like, if you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
If my expectations for you are not getting fulfilled, which happens
all the time. Yeah.
There's no fear.
Right.
There's no fear. I can have the conversation and it's a conversation full of trust.
Yeah.
I'm not fearful how you're going to receive that.
Right.
You're not fearful that your job is like dangling by a thread.
Right.
You can say to me as a manager, you can say like, "Hey, I don't want to do that.
Right.
I don't like that. I think that's the wrong thing." And I'm not going to immediately jump and say like, "Okay, you are a failure. You're not the right."
Right.
I don't trust you anymore. Yeah. And it's super fear based. It's super fear based because fear is the dark side of the force, right?
Absolutely.
Talk of Star Wars.
We can. We are flying a little close to the sun, so
I'm gonna
talk about me more. So
Exactly.
You and my boss, like we said, we've been talking about curiosity, trust, all this stuff. You hired me at 20, 21 as a literal child.
Literal child.
Despite what I would have said at the time.
You said differently,
I'm now 26.
Dang.
gray hair to show it, right? Mm-hmm. If at all, what changes have you seen? Growth points? Are you proud of me? Are you not? This is the time to affirm me or deny me completely in front of an audience.
You can't just look at me, the middle-aged man, and ask, can you say that you're proud of me? You can't just say that.
Because I ask everybody that, Kirk, and no one answers, okay?
Everyone avoids it.
I need it from someone.
Okay? Everyone kind of just dodges the question for some reason. No, I'm proud of you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Next question. No. You said, like, what differences?
What have you seen? Yeah, where have you seen me grow? Where have you seen me change? Yeah. Like you said, I was a very certain person. You feel like now I'm a very curious, open person.
Yeah, and that's what you want. Mm-hmm. I think that's... I also remember saying, not like every good thing in your life stemmed from something that I said. I don't want to imply that. Sure. That's not true.
Sure.
But I remember we together in like a one-on-one, we identified like, hey, like you need to be really honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know what it was you were going through, but you came to me with something that was, it was tough. And there was a part of it that was your fault.
For sure.
There were consequences for what you did or your response to something. I remember what it was.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's really, you're so good at, you're sharp. You have perspective.
Yeah.
That's something that's probably never going to go away unless you, I don't know, I guess you could lose that.
Yeah, choose to.
But you have perspective. The thing you bring to so many conversations is like, well, I've actually thought about it this way before. And so here's some perspective. Not everyone's going to be receptive to that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're someone who's so good at having that perspective, that you become very skillful. Actually, maybe it's a gift. It could be a gift
for sure,
where you're able to see where other people are off. You can see from your perspective, you can see that person's off by 5 degrees. And if they keep going that direction, it's going to be there. You're good at that. You have discernment.
Mm-hmm.
You have discernment. But with someone who has the gift of discernment, it's like having the nuclear code. It's really hard to point that at yourself.
Sure.
It's really hard to say, to be internal,
right,
and stay in your, and direct that laser focused discernment towards yourself. And that can result in judgmentalism.
Sure.
Like, you've been judgmental before. I know.
Definitely
I have
at times. Yeah.
And so I remember saying like, hey, in this, it's going to be really important that you turn that inward. Make sure that your inward eyes, your focus on yourself is, you're taking care of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that that's probably something that's pretty apparent. I think that you guys, now that your frontal lobe is fully developed, finally,
sure,
I think that's going to be something you're going to realize, like, oh yeah, yeah, it's way easier for me to see that my action resulted in this.
Right.
I just got to be honest with that.
For sure.
Forgive yourself for it, but realize, like, oh yeah, if I could persist in doing that, it's going to be the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's something that you're growing in. And I think this is fair to say. I think it's fair to say. As you're developing to a leader,
yeah,
you have ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
You have you're no longer putting yourself in a corner where you feel like you have to rely on talent.
Yeah.
Potential.
Oh God.
Right?
Yeah.
There's just like people like I see something in you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you get to 26 years old, I'm like, okay. Yeah, like we're no longer having it. Like, I see in you conversations. This is like, there has to be something else. There has to be a foundation for who I am, what I want to do with my life.
Right.
And, like over and over again, if you're trying to figure out who you are, what you want to do, you're trying to start something, you're flirting with failure. Like if you start 6 different things, if you're pursuing like growth of anything, like what are you gonna do when it fails?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Because I think that inner focus, I bet if we did a study, I'm going to say something that feels authoritative, perfect, but I bet if we did a study, if you find people that are successful and they're happy with themselves, like I like what I'm doing. And so that kind of eliminates like,
sure, 95% of the population.
Yeah. Like world dictators and stuff like that. Right. You're like, yeah, it's great.
This looks great to me.
About who I am, but yeah, I'm getting results. But like when you see that the results are coming, like the company's happy, people, they have happy employees and they feel good about themselves. It had to start with some inner life,
right,
that was peaceful. That was like, instead of pursuing a comparative metric to another person, I see that person's success and I want that. I see that business, that podcast success, and I want that. When you can come to terms with who you are and be, instead of being a the best version of yourself compared to somebody. Like, if you're choosing to be emotionally, spiritually, mentally, relationally healthy, and like having metrics within those things, I feel like it's a success. Like the other things that kind of are always feel like they're unattainable, the moving targets, they're not so harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't feel like you're a failure.
Yeah.
Right. I'm at my age right now, I'm sick of feeling like a failure mm-hmm. when the goalposts move.
Yeah.
Like I get really good at kicking something.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the goalposts move and I'm like, well, I'm supposed to do what now?
Yeah.
I have to
do your career long isn't long anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 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 It's like, you know, oh, we're all doing this now. And the only way to get better at that or to improve that situation is to keep your eyes inside.
Right.
And to spend part of your time being inwardly focused.
Yeah.
I see that in you.
Thanks.
Not to say I see it in you, because I just told you that we don't do those anymore. We don't do I see in you conversations.
There you go.
It's not a potential thing.
No, but what you're saying is correct in that's all a lot of the stuff that's come to a head in me. I feel like even just in the last like 2 or 3 years, really. And I know you're saying something that resonates with me, because in my head, my response to you, I want to like firework in all these different directions. And I'm going, I can't do that because that's all the best things I have to say. And I want people to pay me for them. So I can't just say it for free. But you're exactly right. And I think that I use the metaphor for people with the title of this, even like in need of attention, right? It's like, well, attention finds you, right? You don't need to look for it in your life. It just shows up, right? And it's everywhere from my back hurts and I can't tie my shoes right now to, honey, we shrunk the kids. Like, it's the extremes, right? Yeah. Of really not that important. You should stretch. And like, how?
Where are the kids? Yeah,
how did you shrink them?
Yeah.
Don't step on them, right?
Great movie, by the way.
I haven't seen it in a while. Probably didn't age well. Okay, yeah. This is such a side note, and I'm going to remember what I was saying. Have you watched The Waterboy recently?
No.
Don't.
It doesn't hold up.
It'll ruin the experience for you.
I saw someone wearing a Waterboy jersey recently. It
did not age well at all. I mean, 6 seconds into the movie, you'll see like, okay, yeah, we can't.
Yeah, it's turning us off.
Our kids can't watch this. I watched that when I was like 8 years old. Anyway.
I recently, not to just, okay, I watched Rush Hour.
I love with it. My family. So good. It's the only one that's allowed. Rush Hour 1, 2, and 3 is the only one that's allowed to say racially insensitive things and it'd still be funny.
I think I'm kind of floating that around. Like, how are we feeling about this, everybody? Because this is still readily available on streaming services. People are okay with
it. And that's the last one. Don't take it. Okay?
Don't take Rush Hour.
It's so funny.
Okay.
So funny. On the scale of tension, from I pulled my back, I can't tie my shoe, and I shrunk the kids, and all the questions that come with that. You know, there are things in our life that push us, right? These things that push. They're people. They want our attention. They want our thoughts. They want our feelings. They want to dictate the actions we take, right?
Yep.
We internally can make a decision like, you know what? Those things matter, but I have a priority list of what things are allowed to push me to take action of these things. When people or influences or whatever it may be learn that their push doesn't do anything anymore, they can't move you, they collectively start to pull. And so it's this picture of like, if you are a believer like you and me, the pull is so strong, you have to have something that counters that, right? And that for us is our faith, right? And so if life is this tightrope, me leaning either way is going to lead to death in some way, right? Like if I lean too much into my faith, I'm going to be like righteously indignant, judgment, the whole nine. I'll have no effectiveness in actually connecting with any person I ever meet, right? Versus the other way, if I lean too much into what pulls on me, that's vices, that's my attention and distraction, like balance, like all these things. And so to actually hold that tension is one of the hardest things. And it's not that you need to fight one or the other, or like I say flight, but like fly from.
Yep.
You have to sit in it, right? You have to live a life of tension. You have to sit in the tension, which everyone thinks sounds great until they actually have to interact with someone who does that, right? Like that sounds great. And then Sarah has to like be married to me, right? Like it sounds great. And that exactly. It sounds great. And then someone who manages me is like, man, he really just keeps bringing this up. All this different stuff. And so that sort of thing. If you're not a believer, I say, just think about Spider-Man, right? Whether it's the boat or the bus or whatever it is, he's holding both ends, right? And if he lets go, it's going to be death for someone, even if it's not him.
Yeah.
Right. And so we have a responsibility to hold the tension, sit in the tension, that sort of stuff.
Great power does come great responsibility.
That's perfect.
That's really good.
Perfect actually. Timing. You're like Uncle Ben to the max.
Yeah. So this, you said this is like, you have these like firework ideas that you kind of want to just pop off, but you got to hold them tight because you want them to be your money-making ideas.
For sure.
The tension thing. Have you written stuff on the tension thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I wrote something on the tension thing for a series,
yeah,
and it got canned. No one liked it.
That's okay.
And so
that's because people are uncomfortable by tension, Kirk.
Well, the metaphor is very much that, like, you don't get like propulsion without tension, right? You know, you can't just launch off of something without physics and tension.
Right. Sure.
And so it's like the idea. And I envision this whole thing being like, you know, stretchy, stretchy, stretchy. And then like, if you release the tension on that one side there, it's just floppy,
right?
You know? And it's just like, you lose the,
yeah.
And so those two things pulling it, it's not comfortable, but we're not called to be comfortable.
Right.
Especially if we want something, we want movement, right? We want impact.
You want more, you want to be a better person. Like, you're asking for tension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I avoid tension all the time. And I realize when I do that, I create other tensions that aren't launching me in the right direction.
Sure.
Because there's always going to be tension between two things, right? Two people, two ideas, a person, an idea, all these different tensions, conflict, right?
Right.
And you can pick, you said you have a priority list, right? Of like, what's your priority? Like, what are the things you can control the most too?
Right.
If your top priority is something you can't control and it depends on two other people's tension, man, you got to know you want that.
Right.
Because that means that you have to go into tension with those two people. You have to figure those things out. But man, that's like choosing which two things you want to have tension between and having some autonomy in that.
Yeah.
That can help that.
Yeah. And to your point, it's like, you know, yes, you can experience tension, and there's good tension and bad tension, right? There's tension to engage in and not, right? And so, for example, like if someone, you know, is a really anxious person, right? Like they are, I would say like you're anxious because you don't have answers, right? So like you feel fear about something that could happen because you don't know if it'll happen or not. You want an answer to whether this bad thing will happen, this situation will go this way, this relationship will turn into that. And so what people do is they don't actually audit what they can control in a situation. They try to implement systems, practices, and things that from their view deliver them control answers, when in reality they're just like taking privacy from someone, or they're stripping someone of their right to choose to divulge or share or whatever. And what it ends up doing is you grip so tightly to control that it slips out of your arms even easier than if you just held it.
Yeah.
Right. Like
it's just holding it.
Yeah.
It feels so inactive.
Right.
It feels like it could fly away.
It feels like it isn't safe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like even this idea of like, you know, if you're insecure about something, it's probably smart because this is something worth securing, right? Like, is it something valuable to you and worth something? And so it's not that you need to hide it and protect it and all this stuff. By all means, please like protect it. But like, you don't need to be like flippant with it either.
Yeah.
You don't need to be like, let's just leave it out here, right? It's a balancing. It's a tension, right? Like, it's like, hey, the second I move this idle thing off of the podium, that door is going to shut, a massive boulder is going to roll towards me, and I need to be ready to like whip my way out of this, right? Like, it's a whole like if this and this and whatever. And I think a lot of people just get caught in the minutia of the details, their pursuit of answers, that they just speed past the effects of their actions and the consequences. And they struggle to go inward or understand emotions.
Yeah.
Not because they don't have the capacity or ability to, but they don't know how.
And parts fear.
Yeah.
So much it comes back to fear. And it's like, I mean, shining an inward light is pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned the trust.
Yeah.
You kind of supplant that trust with the fear analogy. I think there's probably something to that with the tension as well.
For sure.
People are genuinely fearful when it comes to tension.
But yeah, so this is top of mind. Thank you. There's a story in the Bible. My name comes from Jairus.
I've heard it.
It's in the book of Matthew. It's known much more famously for the woman in the picture, typical. Mm-hmm. And so exercise I do a lot is I read it over and over to be able to preach about it in different perspectives.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't want to share this, but I feel like I have to.
Yeah, make that money off of it somehow.
I'm telling you, this is, you can't take this, by the way. So okay. You, I'm releasing this out. People will hear me say this and say to you, do not take this. If I find out, you're going to make me cuss. If I find out this wiggles its way into whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to be so pissed. Okay.
Okay. Well, you start. The problem is if I hear it, it might go into my subconscious.
I know it will.
Intentionally, so I'm just going to not listen to you while you say it.
Perfect.
Okay?
My whole thing was, logistics of the story is like Jairus has a daughter that's sick. Jesus arrives to the beach scene on a boat. Jairus meets him on the beach, and then cut to them walking down like the road to Jairus's house on the hill, because he's like a person of influence in like the town.
Yeah.
And he's like, appearances would make it look like, oh, I'm got Jesus coming to my house.
Yeah.
When inside he's like doing that thing where like, you probably do this to Jody, your wife. You walk ahead and then you wait for them to catch up, and then you walk ahead and then you wait for them to catch up, and then you walk. I do this. I used to do this all the time.
I've done that. Yeah.
And you're just like, come on, let's get a move on.
Yeah.
Cause he's like, my kid's dying. Right. And it's like big crowd forms. Right. And like Jesus starts like crowd surfing. And, there's this woman who like, has all these like, internal, like, bleeding issues and stuff.
Yeah.
And she like, has been like cast out of their town, all this stuff, goes up, touches, she's like, if I could just touch like his clothes, Jesus's clothes, that should be enough for me to be like, okay. She's like spent all her money on like doctors, OBGYN visits, none of it's worked. It's been like 12 years and she's like actively dying. She's considered gross because of like the culture or whatever.
Yeah, unclean.
Not supposed to be there yet. And she touches him and Jesus is like, someone touched me. Who touched me? And they're like, oh, his like disciples are like, oh, everyone's like touching you. Like, it's fine. Like, this is what we do, you know?
We touch you.
And he's like, no, put me down. Like, who's touching me? And they're like, dude, you're crowd surfing. What do you mean? So and he's like, no, like someone touched me and like power came out of me. Like she was like healed immediately. Like, I know something happened. And like on that, she starts like hiding.
Yeah.
And I thought they like clicked of like, oh, how many of us have issues that when put in front of people makes us want to hide.
Yeah.
Right. And this idea that like in our faith, the reason people don't believe in it a lot of times is because they feel like, okay, please track me on this. Because I floated this to Craig and he shot it down. Okay. But a lot of times the reason people might like not believe in Jesus or not want to practice the faith that we both do is because when it comes to their issues, people are like, put that away. You shouldn't tell people about that.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, you're telling people you can't be yourself. And so any setting where they feel like they have to mask or hide involuntarily, they're out. Right. Mm-hmm. And it goes along the lines of like growing up, participation trophies were like the worst thing. Like you don't get rewarded for participating. And so people grew up going, well, if I'm not proficient or good at something, I should just stop. And so then people started going to churches and it was like, well, you don't know the stuff. You don't really know what it means to like connect to this whole thing. You're not proficient. Okay. Well, I'm not gonna be rewarded for just being here. I should just stop.
Yep.
And then we go, they're the problem. When in actuality, we've taught them that the only way to be rewarded is if you win.
Yeah.
When in actuality, the whole Jesus thing is like, it literally is just a participation sport, right? Like the bell curve of like believing is like the top 15 is like all the people who work at churches who have some level of fame or notoriety, T.D. Jakes, right? The bottom 15 is like the people who are like atheists and outward about all that stuff, right? The middle 70 is like, yeah, like I believe in something.
Yeah, it's fine.
All the way to like, I'm trying, you know, I go like every once in a while, like that sort of thing, right? They're literally asked to participate. That's like the whole thing is like, you're worth being rewarded so much so that by you participating, saying, yes, I want to do this, you're in. And because your participation is enough, it compels you to want to do more. as opposed to you're required to do more, and by doing more, that's then when you qualify to be rewarded. And so it's like people have this paradigm of participation trophies are the worst. Don't reward people for just existing while we're trying to get them to be a part of a participation sport.
Yeah.
And they're going, I can't hide that I don't know this stuff.
Yeah.
I got issues. I got this stuff. So it would be better, safer, and all like just overall for my existence and who I am to just not even spend time on this or deal with it.
Disconnect with that paradigm.
Completely.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, we taught people that it's hard to touch Jesus.
Yeah.
To get close to him. And it poses a question of like, who told you Jesus is hard to touch?
Yeah.
And more importantly, who told you it's hard for you to touch Jesus? Because when he's touched by her, it's not just that like, yeah, the power goes on, whatever. It's like, no, her faith literally like touches him.
Yeah.
Like it moves him. And people don't believe they can actually do that. And so it's this paradigm of like all this stuff we've been talking about, like the fear and the trust and the whatever. She's just going like, this is my Hail Mary last shot. And not only does he recognize it and validate it, but he does it in such a way that it doesn't just highlight her, but it gives her the like identity and validation to, in her issues, feel like seen and known.
Yeah.
And he calls her daughter and all this stuff. He assigns stuff to her that gives her value that she's never had before. All while this guy is going like, yo, like we're running out of time.
Yeah.
And he still does it and goes and like all this stuff. And so what you're saying to me, and I'm listening to you, like all this stuff, how it all works together, is just what's been working up inside of me is this idea of like, you know, people want to be a part of something.
Yeah. But
they don't want to be a part of something that costs them the truth, their ability to be honest, their ability to be vulnerable, especially in a time where authenticity is like the thing.
Yeah.
And so if you're asking me to come to a place as I am, it feels like a bait and switch. And so while we tell people they're like unfaithful and deconstruction is whatever and all this stuff, I'm just going like, I kind of get it. Like, I still believe it.
Yeah.
I'm still all the way in. Absolutely. Investor, not a consumer. Whole nine, right? And I could see why someone would think it's as simple as like, oh, well, I don't know the stuff, so I can't be a part of the club. Yeah. And again, whether people believe it or not, I'm just going like, I think more than anything, people want connection. They want some form of human connection that allows them to feel seen, known, heard, loved.
I would say belonging.
And accepted. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah.
Or am I a crazy person?
Yeah. Rambling? Here, can I ask some questions?
Please.
Okay. So Craig Dockery, what was his pushback?
It was the participation thing. I didn't say it as well formed as I just did then.
Cause so you're better at saying
it. I've had like time. 2 weeks to really keep thinking about it.
I was going to see it. I want to develop.
This is the part of the episode where I am bringing things to market before I've thought them through. And so that's what happened. Yeah.
Okay. Here are my thoughts. These are raw thoughts because I'm kind of hearing this first time. Okay. So this feels,
I'll tell you you're wrong. It's fine.
This feels old school. This feels like what the conversation we used to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Let me stick with the participation.
Awesome.
Part because awesome. I feel like that's going to be like a pinch point
for sure.
Because everyone gets irritated culturally and generationally. Millennials.
I have a thought, but continue. Yes.
Millennials have an issue with that.
Yeah.
Okay. The participation trophy. It's a stupid name. First of all, you didn't get the trophy for participating. Now, we gave them out without any thought for what was happening. What we did is we unintentionally moved the metric of what a trophy was for.
Right.
Right. And now you see less. People don't give out participation trophies. They give out trophies for how you won. Mm-hmm. Like if you're on a team, you're in seven-year-old soccer. Like my daughter gets a trophy, not because she participated, but because she was the blank of the team. This is their coach. If her coach is any good, gives her a trophy for how she won.
Right.
And that's truer than there's one winner because there's not one winner.
No.
Like, yeah, the NFL determines what it means to win.
Right.
Right. The game and the MVP. Right. That's, they set the metric, but that's just an organization. That organization doesn't, like the Olympics, the NFL, whatever, they don't actually get to determine what winning is for life. And so the participation trophy thing is super interesting because we're asking you to engage. Like, to be better at life, to have a more fulfilling life, you have to engage. You have to participate. Take a step. That's how you win. That's how you engage. That's how you engage with the world. And so I actually like that call out because it's super helpful to kind of like overthrow the paradigm of this idea of like what it means to win, right? I think that's one thing.
Yeah.
You have like 9 things.
I do.
That's the thing. And I think you're getting better at like essentially putting where it is.
Yeah.
In that story, you told the story of the woman.
Sure,
and
sure.
I was listening and I was all thinking through like her issue and all the thing where I've heard the story. And then the most compelling part of that is when you're like, and there's Jairus. And he's like,
right.
Weren't we doing this thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's got the, and that's actually a really cool moment in that story mm-hmm. because it shows the nature.
Yeah.
Well, it shows a character of God, apparently, right? This character of God is best seen through the character of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I would agree.
Okay. All right. Some people don't, you know. But I think it's really interesting. There's a lot of other things in there that are probably the core philosophy of what you're trying to build into it.
Right.
And like I said, I just stopped listening because I don't want to steal anything from you. So I can't comment on that. Now, I would say there's a couple things in there. Like, what do you want? If you were to say that to a crowd, like, what's the thing that you want them to walk away with?
Yeah. That specific thing, I want them to know that more than anything, whether you resonate or not, I have issues.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're highlighted, it makes me want to hide.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I don't know about you, but when my issues are highlighted and I want to hide, all I'm looking for is comfort and validation.
Yeah.
I don't need my wife to tell me whatever. I need her to treat me like an 8-year-old, give me a hug, tell me I'm okay, that she loves me, and whatever, right? And so the idea being when you encounter Jesus, whether you already have or haven't before, you can know that when your issues are highlighted, whether you bring him up or he does, you giving that to him, you talking to him, you whatever, that touches him.
Mm-hmm.
Like not in a physical way, it actually moves him.
Yeah.
Because you're choosing not to hide. You're exposing yourself.
Yeah.
And by other people going like, what are you talking about? Like, we're all touching you. We're all whatever. It's like, no, there's a different type of touch.
Yeah.
It's this connectivity. It's this emotional connection that you can't see. You won't be able to hear. You'll only be able to feel. And the question is, who told you Jesus is hard to touch? The big brain question, 3000 IQ question to me is, who told you that you can't touch Jesus?
Yeah.
Like, God isn't touched by you making this effort. God isn't touched by you choosing to bring your issues, confront your issues, come out of hiding for the purpose of whatever. Yeah. And the idea that you will get the comfort and validation regardless and coming out of that is this example, right?
Yeah.
And how connecting in that for people to, I understand where you're coming from. We live in a world where your existence is not enough to be rewarded.
Yeah.
That's antithetical to following Jesus. The whole thing is you exist. That's enough for me.
Yeah. It's not what you do.
We can deal with your issues.
Yeah.
You don't have to hide those. You are enough. From the point of you understanding that you're enough, we can then engage and develop and work and go from there. Right. Yeah. And the idea that to truly participate, you have to understand that you can't hide. And you have to choose not to.
Despite what any kind of church culture
this,
or corporate...
All this
yeah,
would tell you, like, you. Even subconsciously, like,
yeah.
My whole life just existing hasn't been enough to be rewarded.
Yeah,
that's actually the worst thing that could happen. Mm. Welfare, bad idea.
Yeah.
What's wrong with these people? Just getting a free handout, blah, blah, blah. The idea that just existing does not equate to value.
Yeah.
Value is equated to production.
That's true.
It's integral.
Yeah.
to our existence and fundamental belief system exists, all of it.
I think that's the crux of philosophy that goes against God.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's integral to any church size, church organization, whatever. And so don't ask people, be like, hey, participate. You're part of it. It's one step. And what you're really telling them is, no, you actually have to have some version of production or connection to value for us.
Yeah.
And you just being here isn't enough for us to acknowledge like this. And as you bring your issues to actually engage, actually go with that is really hard. And so coming back to tension, that actually might slow down the plan we have. Maybe you should just hide that.
Yeah.
Again, antithetical to the whole thing.
Well, if you tie it back to Jesus' story, even if like in his ministry was to go heal individuals so people could, you know, he could point to his father and bring glory. He stopped. He stopped going towards the thing that was the driving force. Like you mentioned, he's running ahead. Like, come on, hike. Everyone knew this was going to be the thing. This was going to be a baller Jesus moment.
Right.
And I think sometimes I work at a church. We get tunnel vision towards the thing that I've seen God move here. I know he's going to do it again. I'm going to do this kind of thing. We're going to pursue it. And I don't know if it's right or wrong, but there are often moments when we miss that, the thing that it asks us to slow down, to put that on hold, because there's a moment here where this, maybe it's an individual, maybe it's a pursuit of something else, but that's a very clear story of Jesus' priority. He was going, but he stopped.
Yeah.
He was going, but he stopped, and he gave all of his attention, all he gave his power. He spoke identity.
Right.
In this moment to someone who had not experienced that before.
And to throw another layer of dressing to really convolute this, it's like, you know, there's epicenter environments and human environments, right? Epicenter being like, this is it.
Yeah.
If you're not here, you're not square, like you're missing out. Versus human environments are like, oh, it's not here. It's like wherever they are.
Yeah.
And I think more people, regardless of whether it's church, work, social settings, but like name, artists, like concert, the whole nine, all of it, they want to go to the place where it's like, no, they're willing to meet me.
Yeah.
They want to take a photo with me. I want to take a photo with them. They want to take a photo with me. As opposed to being like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is the spot. It's all going down here. You're missing out.
Yeah.
People don't actually want that anymore, I don't think.
Interesting.
And so I think it's this tension right now of, does shifting from this like epicenter mindset, this like, if you ain't first, you're last thing that exists just in America, to like this more kind of less programmed, human first, like let's just be kind of sensitive to what's going on. It feels like hippie versus government. It feels like this, like it feels so extreme,
countercultural
for sure. Right, yeah. But I think in any genre, any lifestyle, that's what you're seeing just happening.
Yeah.
And I get paid to tell people that, but yeah.
Yes. Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah. You can just ask me two questions and then we're going to stop talking.
Okay. Am I being a good sounding board?
You're being a great one.
Am I being sarcastic?
No.
I'm working on it, man.
You're doing good.
Thank you. Tell me you're proud of me.
I'm very proud of you, Kirk.
Thank you.
Was that your first question?
That's my first question.
Thanks. Thanks. You've got room for one other, so don't waste it.
It's about you.
Please.
Okay?
Please.
I hear this is something that's familiar to me. I hear this from you. Like, you have this idea, and you're building it. You're
trying.
Part of talking through it is building it. Mm-hmm. You're making realizations as you're talking.
For a fact. Right?
Yeah, this isn't something you've already written down somewhere. If you could take, like, you've got some cool building blocks of something that could be, they hold the tension really well and become like a thing that could launch an idea that someone needs to pay attention to. That's going to maybe a culture changing idea. If you give a percentage, how formulated would you say that this current idea paradigm that you're working with is?
What I just shared with you is, 25% of what I've been working through for the last 18 months.
So there's other work that's not represented in this conversation.
Yes, correct.
Even with that other work that you're like, where are you?
I'm probably 60% of the way there.
Okay. All right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
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 Because I think it could be a thing. Yeah. I would encourage you with that. I think it's a thing.
Yeah.
Do all the things, you know, your inward self. Yeah. You're gonna start bringing a lot of yourself into it, your past. Make sure that story, story based, where you're not the hero of the thing.
Absolutely.
Because the whole Jairus thing in that, that's such a great example.
And it literally,
he was going to be one of the guys mentioned in the same breath as Jesus, but instead,
it's not this about other thing, him.
It's not about him.
Yeah.
It's not about him. There's still healing that takes place. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. I like the way your brain works. I like the way you take all these different perspectives and you kind of just center them around top attention, trust, fear, something like that. And then I think the other part of it is storytelling.
Yeah. I could preach that story 9 different ways on 1,000 different days. Seriously.
Yeah.
And I think I love communication and preaching is my art form is what I always say.
Yeah.
So like that my value isn't that I like can come. So whatever and whatever, but any room I walk in when there's a microphone, I'm going, okay, what would I start with? If I told it, I was at this business summit, like not really a Christian setting. And I go, if he hands me the microphone, just out of the crowd, hey, you, why don't you come say something? What is this room? What would they respond to? Like, what joke would I start with? What would I say? What do I have formulated enough that it would make sense to people?
Yeah.
Any room I go in, that's like my thought. And so as a communicator, I'm going like, the value I add as a communicator versus just the skill of communicating is the sensitivity I have to the person I'm talking to.
Yeah.
And doing that on scale is what makes you successful. Doing that like one-to-one is what makes you impactful.
Yeah.
And so my ability to go, hey, I have this written down. I think of it and can talk about it in a very, like what we would say, sticky or connective way of like, I can literally talk in third person through that story.
Yeah.
And it give it a whole new paradigm and perspective because it's my literal name.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And no one talks about that side of it. And I can be sensitive enough to, in a moment when I'm crying and feeling whatever, when I hear something go, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I am hiding right now because my issues are being exposed. I don't like it.
I hate that. Yeah.
Because I feel like it's in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing.
You feel exposed.
That's the whole thing.
And Jesus wants you to realize that being exposed isn't the worst thing.
And I've heard it and it hit me of like, who told you it's hard to touch Jesus? And I'm just going, oh my gosh. Like, it's not in the way of like, oh, he's so close or whatever. It's like, oh no, I can actually move him with how I feel.
Yeah.
Because so many people feel a certain way and they think these emotions are these external factors impacting them. And it's like, no, your emotions are a bodily function. Like the same way you smoke cigarettes since you were 12 and you're whatever.
How'd you know that?
Inside, we can smell it. Right. We all say it, but we can smell it. Your nervous system is reacting based on the stress you're experiencing. Yeah. And so the solve to that isn't you need more B12, which you probably should.
Yes.
It's also you have to actually, like you said, go inward and work through this inner world and inner understanding and these like held beliefs and this idea of like, oh, there are absolutes out there. I just don't think that's true. Because the second something's absolute, is it everything absolute? When is it not absolute? When is it that, right? Like, but that's fundamentally like in a Christian, you would be like, oh, you're a heretic. Great. In the real world, you're like, oh, you're just fishing for whatever. And so I just think we're just on this cusp of like, I'm not going like, oh man, I get paid to like talk to people about Jesus or to like be in church settings and like people my age are like kind of done with that. I'm just going like, oh, what a taunt. Like they're more susceptible and open ever to believing anything.
Yeah.
What a time. It's not my fault.
They're looking for spiritual connection.
It's not my fault you don't know how to look at this and be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like that, to me, that's the value of like, you can't have human connection without communication in some way.
Yeah.
It is the crux of any connection you can make. And so on a one-to-one level, I can be impactful. On a 1-to-1,000 level, I can be successful. But more than anything, how can I connect with people?
Yeah.
and that being the aim as opposed to fame or recognition or more money, although I would love to make more money.
Because the belief is that connection is valuable in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important to keep that layer in there, because when you start to view connection as a means to something, then you get off track a little mm-hmm. bit. So, and I think too, like you talked about going in the room and that, like you see like, what would I say if they gave me that? I think there's one probably other layer that you need to make sure that you're taking care of your inner self is like, what can they offer to me?
Hmm.
It's not just what can I say to them. It's what do they need?
It's, absolutely. It, you might bring 100%, 100%.
You might be able to bring that.
100%.
But it might not be just yeah. you. It might be collaboration. For it could sure. be something else like that.
Well, yeah. And I've shifted a lot on this, and that's why I should have prepared to talk to you longer, because we're just going to keep going.
Talking forever, yeah.
Is I think it's more effective to say something to someone the right way as opposed to telling them the right thing.
Yeah.
And yeah. you could tell me the right thing in the wrong way and I won't hear it.
Yeah, you could it's not communicated.
You could tell me something mildly mm-hmm. applicable in the right way.
Yeah.
And I'll receive it a lot better. And to that exact point, I'm going, okay, how would I start this to connect with them?
Yep. Yep.
From there, what is the right way to say this more than what is the right thing to say? And it's also this idea of like, you know, you can't craft one central statement for all these people.
Right.
And expect them all to gravitate and connect to it. You'll hit, absolutely. But to varying degrees, right? It's like splattering paint on a bullseye. Like you'll hit all the rings. You'll hit all the stuff.
As a bullseye, though.
Yeah. But it's right. Yeah. Versus, so like, how do you not create one moment for 1,000 people,
mm-hmm.
but you create 1,000 moments for 1,000 people.
Yeah.
It's atmosphere and connection.
Yeah.
And that being the calling card of informing how you communicate. How do I build an atmosphere for people for connection?
Because the thing that people want more than what they, if they say they want to know something new or hear something new, they want belonging. They're like wired for belonging. And so when you can create an environment where they feel like they can be themselves, like Brene Brown, heard of her. She's the best ever explanation of belonging. Like the opposite of belonging is not rejection. The opposite of belonging is fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
You have to like carve off pieces of yourself to fit in here. Belonging is like being accepted there.
Yeah.
And that's what people crave that so much. And when you say something in a certain kind of way, and it's just all it's communicating to them, not just what you say, but what you're communicating, is you got to change everything
yeah.
in order for you to be worthy of
100%. This. 100%. Well, and that's the thing, right? That. It's like at the end of the day, you can't give someone something they don't want.
Yeah.
And you're going, I have all this to give. And they're going, that's
not what I want.
We want.
Yeah.
That's not what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just going like, but that's what I have.
Yeah.
And that's not how it works.
And what you have is connection.
For sure.
The thing you have is an information.
For sure.
It's connection. You yeah. have that. And they do yeah. need that. People do need belonging.
Kirk,
mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you for coming by.
It's been way more fun than I thought it was going to be.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I definitely want to have you back and talk more.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask where people can find you because they don't care.
I don't want
them to. Is there any closing statement, thing you'd like to say?
Yeah.
You have the floor before I close this out.
Yeah, I want to come back and talk more to you. This is amazing.
Thank you.
I want to talk about, I don't know what I want to talk about. But if I were to say to you, can I come back and talk about this? Would you accept me to come back?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Whatever you say, that's what the next one will be about.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Kirk Marshall. This has been In Need of Attention. See you next time.